Hi, I'm Henry Lin from Better World. For those of you who have been with us a number of years, you may have noticed that we focus on a topic from many different angles. Whether it is looking at different companies solving a similar challenge, or talking to very different experts about how to solve a portion of the climate crisis, we value facts and science from all sides. As a result, we at Better World urge you to listen to this story, for it presents hope for the future and a better understanding of the farmers, companies, and U.S. government who have been both part of the problem and the solution to our climate crisis. Further, we don't always get facts right. On behalf of Mitch, we would like to note a correction. 75% of the land that we mentioned as farmland is actually about 70% of privately owned land being farmland. And since the government owns about 40% of all land in the U.S., farmland represents a total of 40% of that land area. We have and will continue to highlight the challenges of our modern-day agriculture, the desertification that is happening globally, and the degradation of carbon-sequestering ecosystems. We are here to help you. We remain focused on empowering you, our listener, to create change by providing you with actionable steps and solutions. Again, I'm Henry Lin, and thank you for helping. I'm Henry Lin, here on special assignment in Washington, D.C., just across the street from the EPA, with Mitch Ruda of Farm Journal for part two of our special series, Better World. Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it. So welcome to Better World, and welcome back, Mitch Ruda.
Nice to be here.
We're just having a party over here in D.C. It's a really great time. Great time. Mitch, without recapping too heavily, we are discussing the fact that the big agro industry is not necessarily the big bad wolf, not necessarily Satan, and that a lot of these practices that were harmful have been transitioned outward because farmers are the stewards of something like 75%, did you say, of U.S. land? And you were going to educate us a little bit more to start us off on tillage, and then we were going to get deep into carbon sequestration and what consumers can do. Would you like to start us off with some tillage talk?
Oh, we talked so much last time about different practices. The one practice that we didn't talk about is tillage practices. So one of the big changes is you started to talk about soil erosion, and soil right. erosion often comes from tilling. And you turn up the soil, and you leave land fallow, and that's when it blows.
So just to say it at the outset, before we get deep into tillage, we do have a soil problem. We have a soil problem globally for a number of different reasons, whether it's peatlands or in agriculture. And you're super aware of it, and soil erosion is a thing, correct?
Soil health is the key to maintaining water quality and to sequestering carbon. And both of those have to do with how you farming practices, and there's what's called minimal tillage or no tillage. There are all sorts of ways to turn land less. There's new kinds of seed, new kinds of planters that plant seed right into the debris of last year's crop, mm-hmm. and destroy some of the last year's crop goes into enriching the soil. That means mm-hmm. less nutrients have to be added to the soil, but it has I guess a couple challenges. One is it's a new practice, and so any kind of new practice takes learning and risk. We talked mm-hmm. before about how farmers really have only 40 paydays in their entire life,
right?
40 years of one payday each year,
right?
And so they are generally risk averse, and anytime you tell them to try to do something new, they think, well, gee, fall could come and my crop could suck, and then I'm going to be out a lot of money. Anyway, tillage has practices have changed dramatically over the last 10 years. There's still a lot of folks that are tilling the soil completely, but there's a definite increase in low and minimal till. New, as I told you, new machines and new technologies and new seeds right. are all making that possible.
So tillage, in among some of the other practices that we were talking about, you had mentioned biologics. You had mentioned the way that we were hybridizing some of our foods to be more resistant. You had also mentioned that we have precision technologies now that can variably distribute nutrients dependent on, you know, what they sense and see, so that there's a lot more technology, a lot more intelligence going into this process, helping us to be better with the land and farming. It also sounds to me like there are still some problems that are, and I want to give them some note, that are still going on. So what are the problems today that are contributing to soil erosion, soil degradation? What are some of our greatest threats to soil health? Before we move forward. If you know.
So
it's a tough question.
No, I'm not sure I know all of the science and technology that you are asking for. I think I know where to find it, but I'm afraid that I won't be able to give you the complete answer. I know that tillage is an answer. I know that nutrient management strategies are an answer. Mm. I know that using modern nutrients and additives and fungicides and biologics are part of the answer,
right.
And all of that affects a complicated ecosystem.
Right, and this is what you're educating farmers on.
Yeah.
Right.
And I want to say one thing at the beginning. You said that you were learning that not all farmers, it's not all the big, bad corporate farmers. I don't want to be an apologist for an industry that still has dramatic improvements to make.
Yes.
You want me to say something controversial, I'll point out that something like 85% of the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico is caused by farming that's coming from the north central states,
right,
and going down the Mississippi River. So I don't think there's any doubt among farmers and among those who are looking at agriculture that there are improvements that have to be made, that farming has not been the red tide that's off of
right,
Florida, that's all because of agriculture.
Right.
And farming has escaped the tarring that it maybe deserves.
Right.
But in the meantime, the industry is full of people that see the future and are trying to get us to the future.
Right.
And it's everybody's a good actor, but
right,
there's a lot of people that care.
It's systemic, though. It's a question of not one versus the other. There are a lot of people and a lot of work that needs to be done here, and there's a heavy education lift that you guys are tackling, correct?
That's correct. And so we're really trying to help the whole industry see the inevitability of change and see a pathway to change. And that's part of why we're working with folks like Nature Conservancy and let people understand the resources that they have available. They have many, many people that are completely focused on agriculture worldwide and have solution sets. So we have to wake up the farming base to be thirsty. I often think about it as creating a market for the next generation of solutions.
Right. And these next generation of solutions that you guys are working on so intently, this includes to some capacity the consumer, correct?
Of course it does.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, as I told you last time, there's a two-way communication that has to happen. On the one hand, a lot of I think consumers have a lot of misconceptions about how farms work. Mm-hmm. They think it's all big, bad corporate farms. They think that farmers don't care. They don't understand that farmers are families that are concerned about their own health and safety too. On the other hand, where was I going?
Upward, outward, inward, and onward, Mitch.
Yes.
You're very, very focused.
You were talking about consumers.
Yes.
You're
very focused on the farm side, and you're also focused on the consumer side. So yeah, Take me a little bit more into those.
Yeah, so I was saying, so we often think that consumers need to better understand farming. Farmers also need to better understand the pressure of consumers and how serious consumers are about voting with their dollars. Look, the next generation, the millennial generation buys on cost. There is no doubt that there is a dramatic change in buying habits where younger people are aware of the corporate social responsibility.
Right.
They want to know that they're buying. If you get a black label that I won't mention the dairy, but my son came home one day and said, no more milk from this dairy.
Right.
Because he had heard about their practices. I'm
right,
not even sure it was true. It might have been a rumor. But in any case, he was prepared to vote with his feet and say, no
yep,
more of that.
Right.
And I think that's everybody sees that. Walmart sees it. So Walmart, as I think you know, is the largest grocer in America by far.
Yes.
25% of all grocery in America is Walmart. 24%, I think, is Walmart.
Shout out to Walmart.
Wow. And they are deeply developing. I know they're head of sustainability. They're grocery business executives. And they are busy trying to build the most sustainable food supply in America.
Right, right.
They often see themselves as competing against Amazon on a global level in right. the food business. Amazon, although they own Whole Foods, and which tiny. Has a big white hat on it,
right.
but it is a tiny thing.
Right.
And Amazon, I mean, Walmart is thinking about, in the long term, we're going to beat them at that game. Because, and they are busy working on closed-loop supply chains for beef. They have a series of ranchers that are creating beef that's going to go into Walmart. It's already in Walmart in several Southeast states with a special black label on it where they have blockchain information on everything that went into
we know
that.
Where this beef went.
We right. know everything about the beef.
Right.
And that is going to be, you're going to see more and more of that. The next generation is going to care a lot about that. And the more you learn about where did your stuff come from, and the more you ask where did that stuff come from, the more pressure you put on the food companies to tell you.
Right.
And that requires, and that light that we're shining on changes behavior. Because
right.
the more you say, you got to tell me, then they got to have a good story to tell you. And then they realize, well, our story isn't all that good. So let's go make
pressure
a good story.
Pressure to the place you're buying food from, whomever it is, pressure to tell me everything.
Right. And I wouldn't necessarily assume that it always means buy small, buy local, although small and local is great and sweet. But the real pressure on our food system on fixing the nutrients that are being dumped in the Gulf of Mexico isn't going to get fixed if we are running around the edges of the problem,
right.
the center of the
lean
problem.
Into Nestle and General Mills.
Lean into Nestle and General Mills and PepsiCo. And every one of those companies is aware that they have to make a case to the consumer that they are good corporate citizens.
We are going to take one quick commercial break and give a special commercial announcement as a congratulations to a small, very low-cost carrier, an airline, called Volaris. Volaris is based out of Mexico and runs some routes for us in the Northeast to some of our favorite places in San Salvador and in Mexico with regular service that usually costs you around $500 round trip. Super, super reasonable. But it was brought to my attention yesterday that Volaris has a carbon offset program for the flyer. Isn't that interesting? Us consumers can now shop Volaris and a shout out also again to JetBlue, to offset our carbon emissions. We can pay to have the amount of carbon that is created sequestered with a partner in Volaris. I highly recommend, little PSA for everyone, not that the show isn't just one giant PSA, highly recommend looking into carriers that support carbon sequestration and empower you as the consumer to sequester your own carbon. That said, make sure that your airline carrier has commitments to sequester its own carbon. So, special thanks to the folks at Volaris and, of course, the folks at JetBlue for all of their work. Good job, guys. Bringing us back, Mitch, I'm very, 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 very excited to get to our carbon sequestration talk because we, tip of the iceberg. But why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the markets that are being developed? Not quite there yet. Disclaimer. But there are carbon sequestration markets being developed for ag. Can you tell us all about them, please?
Well, as I mentioned last time, ag has the potential to be the biggest carbon sink we have.
Right.
And if we grow right and treat the soil right, we can reverse carbon usage. I mean, ag uses some carbon, but it can save much more carbon than it uses.
Right.
And the trick to that, obviously, is money. And how do you make this economic for the farmer to pay attention to it? And that requires the offset markets. There are many companies, JetBlue, if JetBlue can buy carbon credits that offset its use, that's for real. They're still putting the gasoline in the airliner and burning it up. But
they're using more efficient gasoline.
Well, they're certainly using more efficient gasoline, but the credits are saying you're going to let us do that because we all want to fly and it uses carbon, but our footprint is actually neutral because we're turning the money back and saving the carbon somewhere else.
Perfect balance,
it's
right?
It's perfect balance. It totally works. That pressure will help agriculture. As you pour that money into agriculture, agriculture can use that money to actually save the carbon.
How is this process?
The biggest problem is measurement.
Excellent.
So you have to be able to accurately measure in any carbon credit system. It has to be for real. It can't just be, hey, I planted some good stuff and I know that was good for the planet, so give me money. It has to be how many tons of what did you save, and that has to be measured. And measuring carbon sequestration across hundreds of millions of acres is very difficult.
Something that the Department of Energy is working on?
So that is something the Department of Energy is working on, and the Noble Foundation, many different Soil Health Institute, there are groups that are all thinking about what is the science and what is the measurement system. And there, I mean, in some ways you can do it by a deduction of what practice and what should be the result of that practice, but really what you need is the actual measure of carbon in the soil.
Right.
Now, that's one part of it. The other part of it is making a system that can trade into agriculture. One of the biggest initiatives.
This is a technology system just to measure, track, and then trade?
No, there's a measurement system, and then there's the trading system. So you think of those as two separate things, but they both have to work.
Right.
So the measurement system, that requires measures of actual devices, some kind of device. How cheap can you make that device?
Stick
it
in the ground.
That you can stick in the ground and get a real score. Then you need the markets. The markets on carbon are relatively established, but for a farmer, the best market would involve both carbon and water quality. And there's a major initiative called the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium that now has, I think, 40 or 50 major companies from Cargill, General Mills, Corteva, Syngenta, all working together on trying to coordinate and normalize and standardize what are we measuring and how are we trading it. And they're doing it across water and carbon.
Interesting.
But it almost all relates to soil health.
Right. Okay. So let's lean into
this is a massive initiative. They got $20 million grant from USDA to finish the science. Mm-hmm. That work is underway. They have pilots that they're rolling out now, but the marketplace isn't really expected to be operational until 2022 and probably 2025 before it's deployed
for
scale.
So let's lean into what the consumer can do, because you had identified that the consumer, of course, has to hold every single food producer that they interact with responsible and do their own homework, ensuring that the most sustainable practices are used. And great advice. I stand behind it and think that you and I are going to do a partnership in the future that involves a lot of content being created. Look out for it on the website, betterworld.media, people. It's coming. I'm going to twist his arm on the way to the airport. Outside of that recommendation, I would like to talk about, for carbon sequestration, what the consumer can do to further this and make this more of a reality. So I know that consumers can purchase through Cloverly, through Pachama, their own offsets for their own behavior. And certain companies are already plugging in offsets directly into their purchases, like the airlines that we just mentioned. But what do you think are some of the immediate things that we can do to make this more of a reality? On the consumer side, of course.
Well, as I told you, I think it is important to ask what are these companies doing, and to make, to not jump to the assumption that they're that because they're big, they're bad.
Right.
Now, I'm nervous about being an apologist for big food, but I'm aware that big food also has power.
Right.
That the size of what PepsiCo can do to change, you know, to change production is way different than what an individual farmer can do.
Right.
And in fact, can drive change across the whole food system. So I think I would try to be aware of the claims that are being made and learn more about the stance of big companies that are trying to alter the entire food system.
So specifically to carbon sequestration, while, again, we advocate that you guys check out the Cloverleys and the Pachamas of the world, bear in mind that Better World is going to be shortly launching, relaunching its carbon debt program, where you can pay down your carbon debt by supporting agroforestry farmers in Latin America who are being trained away from cows and soy over to things like coffee and cacao and timber. But outside of those things, the support that we give to farmers who potentially are sequestering carbon, the education that we give, there's a gap between somebody understanding that I buy their food and knowing that carbon sequestration is really important to me and what they're doing now. How do we perhaps close that communication gap, or how do we as consumers better express our values back to farmers and the farming community? Or do we express them to, you know, our senators? Do we write letters, or do we go hang out outside the USDA? You guys,
well, you gave me a lot of choices, and you probably have to do a little bit of all of that. The fundamental power that a consumer has is what he purchases.
Right.
So being a smart purchaser is smart. That's the best thing you can do, and it's the most powerful thing you can do.
When you're speaking our language.
When people stop buying something that they don't believe in and start buying something they do believe in, that moves a market. And it makes all the people who you stopped buying from change their behavior to go get the business. And so that the very fact that you care and that you say you care, that you write a letter and say, or you look up on the website. Incidentally, every food company knows every page of their website that's been viewed. And the more of you that view their corporate social responsibility page, you want to learn about whether General Mills is good or bad, go to their page and look at their sustainability pages. And they will say, boy, more and more consumers are asking questions. That's going to redouble their commitment. It's going to raise their spending on, they already feel pressured by consumers, but you can pressure them more.
Right. We are going to take one last commercial break before we wrap up here with Mitch Ruta and give a special shout out to Package Free Shop. Please take a look at packagefreeshop.com. Package Free Shop is one of the pioneers of consumer plastic-free goods or consumer package-free goods. You are able to purchase now, it might blow your mind, things like soap, shampoo, and conditioner with no packaging and or with no plastic. There are alternatives. Reusables such as cutlery, cups, and bowls. Yes, I am advocating that you take your reusable cutlery, cup, and bowl with you every day. Are available at packagefreeshop.com. I take mine to the smoothie place and even have the guys at Diggin' and Sweet Green use my bowl sometimes. Highly recommend Package Free Shop for all of their incredible consumer package-free goods. Also recommend that you take a look in your own bathroom and recognize how much plastic is in there and what you could swap out. Packagefreeshop.com. Have a look. Shout out to Lauren Singer. You're one of our favorite eco rock stars. We are back with Mitch Ruta. And Mitch, you've given us a lot to think about. And the fact that the carbon sequestration markets are being developed and are coming in agriculture, and that there is all this positive change, and that really we have to work through our consumption behaviors at a food processor level and vote with our dollar in order to create change. All of this makes tremendous amount of sense. Before we sign off and I ask you how many cow poop jokes you got for me, because I got to assume that you guys talk about shit frequently, before we talk about any of the initiatives that you guys, on a more serious note, forward-facing, have at Farm Journal for consumers who are like us that we should look out for, or some of the educational resources that we should look out for. I would like to know if there is one particular message that you have for the consumers, because you have apologized for being an apologist, and I wanted to see if we could get you on what we consider to be record. We don't have a real record, Mitch. About where you stand on what has to change and what we're working on changing within agriculture as a whole. Would you like to summarize it for us nice and neatly at the end, and then we'll take it out to the future of Farm Journal?
Well, first of all, technology is our friend, not our enemy.
Right.
It's the way we will innovate our way out of this problem. I'm completely convinced. I have faith in mankind that the more we...
Well, it's been working that way, right?
It has been. And the more we deal with pressures, I mean, we talked about the Dust Bowl. That was worse than we have today. And there was a mammoth change because everybody saw the effects. And I think that, I talk about GMOs a lot because I think consumers have a big misconception about GMOs. And GMOs are the among the most important tools we have to grow more food with less environmental damage. They are fundamentally saving the environment. But when consumers just say, I don't know, it sounds... It sounds too futuristic for me. I don't trust it. What you're really doing is...
You can trust Mitch from Trust in Food, people.
You're putting a lever. The biggest thing agriculture is worried about is that consumer misunderstanding of agriculture practices will cut us off from the technology that should solve the problem. So try to learn more and not assume that everything you read is right until you understand what is, you know, why are there GMOs? There are GMOs to make better products. Mm.
Tell me a little bit in summary about the problem that we face and some of the solutions that you're implementing, particularly as it pertains to soil health, please.
I feel like we've covered so much of this.
I'm just asking for a recap.
I got it. I mean, we are desperately trying to raise awareness among everybody in agriculture about the pressure to change, the need to embrace new technologies, and the pathways to learn more, cut risk, measure better.
And perhaps even get premiums for better products.
Premiums for better products. The USDA is a remarkable group of people. I particularly am talking about the Natural Resource Conservation Service at the USDA. They truly are spending billions of dollars that have been appropriated by Congress to help farmers get to the next generation. There are incredibly passionate people there. I've learned a little bit about how the government works, and some of it isn't pretty because
bitch goddess is the word you're looking for.
Bitch goddess. That is the word I'm looking for. The first expression I learned when I started to work with the federal government is that the government will happily spend a dollar to keep from wasting a dime. They are rightly worried about trying to do things that are, you know, not spend $500 on a toilet seat. And so everything has to be checked twice, run through committees, driven by consensus. That makes it slow moving. Mm-hmm. But the people there are so smart and so dedicated and so passionate about helping farming change. Incidentally, I should mention that among the consumer outreach, we have two pieces of our enterprise that are focused on consumers. One is collecting stories from farming that we can share with food companies to share with consumers about the good that's happening on the ground. But here in Washington, D.C., the USDA is, not everybody knows probably, but the National Mall that runs between the Capitol and the Washington Monument is lined by museums. And the only building that is on the National Mall that is not a museum is the headquarters of the USDA.
Right.
And they have a garden right outside there that faces the mall that we have taken over and turned into a modern agricultural garden. We call it Agriculture Through the Voice of a Farmer. You can go visit this garden. 20 million people are on the mall each year, and learn about modern farming practices. We call it Agriculture Through the Voice of the Farmer because we have created an app. When you go to the garden, you download an app, and there's 12 different spots where you can learn about how farming is being practiced today, and it's all done with a narrated by farmers nationwide talking about what they do.
Outstanding. So to recap, we want the consumer to lean in to the food producer and processor, email them, hit them up, let them know that this is important to you, not just by voting with your dollar. Definitely vote with your dollar too. Do your research and make sure. We have cited General Mills today as a company that does care. So if nothing else, let's take a look at General Mills as a starting point and let's see how much they care and what that means to you as the consumer. Reaching out to your senators and to your Congress folks, because while I support the Green Deal, it is in some capacity largely ceremonial still, not only because nothing's been implemented, but make sure that soil health and carbon sequestration are the important topics that you comment on, or at least express to your senators, that means something to you as they do to us. Last but not least, not just the cow shit jokes, Mitch.
What, I don't have any.
What are great? I've got enough ex-girlfriend jokes on this podcast that we don't even need any more cow shit jokes. What are the future initiatives that you guys are thinking about that are consumer facing? You know, under 60 seconds or less.
Oh, gee. Well, first of all, I think we're going to bring the garden that we brought to the National Mall all across the country. We Amazing. Often talk about getting more consumers to go visit farms. As you know, there's more agritourism. There are farms that are open to the public that help you learn about where your food comes from. That education will help you understand what's good and what's bad. But we've often thought that the best thing we can do is bring the farm to the people. So I was at EPA right before I came over here because we want to expand the garden that we have at USDA over onto EPA's side.
Yep.
And on the other side of the mall, and they want to build a pollinator garden there and show how rain can be captured off their roof and used to water crops.
And the gardens, people.
That's right. And we've talked to several state departments of agriculture that want to install something like this in state capitals in other parts of the country.
Tremendous. Please look out for some content from myself and Mitch on the Better World site. We're going to go into negotiations in the back of an Uber right now. But there is clearly a lot about farming that we can teach the average consumer. And I look forward to learning. Mitch, thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
It was fun doing it.
I'm Henry Lynn, and this has been another fun and rad episode of Better World. Tune in soon for more on regenerative farming and what you can do to help save the world. Thanks again, everybody.